Welcome to Making Change, podcast of the Chronicle of Philanthropy. I'm Hilda Gottlieb, author of the Pollyanna Principles and co-founder of Creating the Future, a nonprofit living laboratory for accelerating social change. It is my privilege to host this podcast, where we talk with change leaders from around the world about this sector's potential for creating visionary social change. I'm so pleased to welcome Deborah Jacobs as my guest today on Making Change. After a long career in the banking industry and a change of heart that led to a change of life, Deborah is now the CEO of the Patterson Foundation. Unlike most foundations, Patterson has no grant cycles and no giving designations. Their charter mandates simply that they seek possibilities for good. The result is a highly flexible foundation that sees its role as building meaningful relationships towards a goal that is simultaneously broad and yet highly focused, the goal of creating new realities. Given the breadth of her experience in many walks of life, and given her role in making the Patterson Foundation the source of innovation it's becoming, it's my pleasure to have Deborah Jacobs share her observations with us today here on Making Change. My guest today on Making Change is Deborah Jacobs with the Patterson Foundation. Welcome, Deborah.
Well, it is an honor to be with you today, Hildy.
I'm so pleased that you are with us. Can you talk a little bit? You have had a very interesting path that brought you to the Patterson Foundation and actually brought the Patterson Foundation to where it is. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that before we get started?
Well, actually, you may think it's interesting. I think I've had a boring life, but since I live in the space of possibilities, I make it perhaps a little bit more interesting. I was a career banker, had a phenomenal career. My husband told me I was whining one night, and I said, no, I just had a bad day. And he said, no, I want you to change your life to be happy. That is a very scary thing to say to an individual who's a workaholic.
Wow.
Who's worked in one field for decades, 25 years. But I took advantage of that loving warning to get happy, and I paused to decide, was I happy, was I not happy? I went and wrote a book about myself, more of a booklet, 35 pages, that captured the essence of my values and what I had accomplished in my life.
Wow.
And that book with six people around the country. One of my themes in life is relationships are everything, because it is through and with other people that we actually do create change. You cannot create change alone. So these people had incredible brainstorming opportunities, and I ended up pursuing path in consulting, pursuing a path in nonprofits, and I actually left banking to become the vice president of institutional advancement at Ringling College of Art and Design. And for those who love fancy titles, that's actually translated into thou shalt raise money. What I learned at Ringling, which was indispensable to my life, was it really kicked on my philanthropy gene, because every one of us every day wakes up, puts our feet on the floor, and we have an opportunity and a responsibility to use our gifts to reflect our values. I hope to use our gifts to reflect our values and make a difference. When you work with people who are potential donors and you listen to what's important to them and you help them find their joy, quite frankly, there is no greater joy than using your gifts to the highest ability. I was then recruited to go run a private foundation with three rules. Help us make the grants we want to make, be an impartial sounding board for those who need a safe place to talk, and help the community achieve its potential, but be a little bit below the radar screen.
Wow.
Again, ooh, you want me to pay me to do that? That's interesting. So that is when I entered into the world of institutional philanthropy. But even then, I kept looking at it through the lens of possibilities.
Wow. That is an amazing path with all kinds of twists and turns. And what that says is that I'm really excited to ask you the following question, which is, through all of that, as you look through all of those different lenses at the change that you've seen in communities, when you see change happening, what do you see undergirding that change? What are the factors that you see happening that create that change?
I think when I see change, it either happens because there's a big crisis or there's a big opportunity. And there's actually themes in both of those that undergird it, in that when there's a big crisis, leadership emerges. When there's an opportunity, traditionally, there's leadership in place who loves to take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. But I think the real change comes from when people are allowed to demonstrate leadership that isn't hierarchical. So I think that whether it's a disaster or an economic crisis or a tragedy crisis, people rise to the occasion. Now you get into the, is it temporary change because of the crisis or is it sustained change? Mm-hmm. So it comes out of leadership, willingness to stick with it and carry a load, and a readiness that you are open for a change that happens. If you're not ready, you can talk about it all day long, you can plan all day long, but if you're not ready for change, you have to have that readiness there.
Let's talk a little bit about that. That's curious to me. What does that readiness look like? Is this a personal readiness? Is this institutional readiness?
I think it is always both. Because this isn't a let's achieve our personal potential discussion. I think we're talking more about community change. But people, even when they're engaged in community change, they're going to change themselves, because real community change happens when you talk to people who are different than yourself. Mm. Talking to the people who are like yourself is like driving around the cul-de-sac. You really need to get out of the cul-de-sac and either on the alternate routes or you need to get on the superhighway. And then you're going to meet a whole bunch of different vehicles out there. I think that's when change happens, when we reach out and connect with other people. And as soon as we connect with other people who may philosophically think differently than we do, or their backgrounds are different than we are, we ourselves change. If we are ready to change, if we are open to change. So it really is a personal orientation, but then it's how you work within organizations or work within community or work within committees.
It's been interesting as I've watched the Patterson Foundation over the past several months that you guys have been on my radar. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that you've almost institutionalized that into the foundation, that it is very clear that you've created an opportunity to learn and to morph, that just as you said that when change happens externally, it changes us individually. It seems like that's what's going on with you guys as well.
We talk about we are in a space of building connective tissue to create new realities. We actually force ourselves, we have to be aware of the now, but we have to always be pushing ourselves to the what can be. Mm-hmm. And so that's our culture, that's our orientation. But we're also very much aware we don't have the answers, and there's good stuff happening all over the place. So if we can connect and learn from others, we'll be able to take that in better, stronger places for new realities. Everything we do through the lens of local and beyond. Sometimes we start in the beyond, sometimes we start locally, but we force ourselves then to bring what we learned beyond back home, or take what we learned at home and export it to where our circles that we're developing beyond. And I have to tell you that we are a place that very readily understands that learning has multiple parts. First of all, you have to be willing to learn. You have to then adjust as you learn. We borrowed a term from the Gates Foundation called strategy refresh. Mm. You can't assume just because where we started, that path is the right path over time. That's actually one of the challenges I learned over the years from grant cycles. Right. When people apply for a grant, they have to tell you what their anticipated outputs and outcomes are. They have to actually apply for a grant well ahead of when you're going to give them the grant. Then they have to execute it. Then they have to report on it. I learned that during that whole timeline I just laid out, there are immense forces in their lives, in their organization's life cycles, and the challenges they face. And if you stick to the same outputs and outcomes that you originally determined, those may not even be relevant mm-hmm. after So you have to be able to have those strategy refreshes along the way about what did we learn that we didn't anticipate before, and then do the course correction so that we can stay on the big goal. One of the phrases we use a lot is organic intentionality.
Tell me what that means. That is a lovely phrase.
I'm not sure it's in Wikipedia, so
it may be after our conversation.
Maybe. But we think in terms of, we know we want to have an impact in this space, whatever the space is. So we're intentional about having positive change, but we have to be organic along the way because of those course corrections and allowing other factors to weigh in or other dilemmas that might have us give us a little detour along the way, but we never lose sight of what the ultimate goal is.
Can you, Deborah, share a story or something that shows us what that looks like in practice?
Let's see. We're in mid-course exploration right now. This is an exploration of a potential partner. Mm-hmm. There's a national movement called the Campaign for Grade Level Reading, and it's being led by Ralph Smith from the Annie Casey Foundation. He's the consummate visionary leader, make things happen kind of guy. Mm-hmm. He's working with 129 communities across the United States, all different in their communities, but around certain assurances of the premises that you must be on grade level reading in the third grade. Because up until third grade, you can learn to read. But after third grade, if you can't read, there are likely life problems. Right. So the theory is if you can get everybody on the campaign for grade level, on third grade reading. And our premise on how we're exploring with them is there alignment with what we could bring to the table of how to help the campaign for grade level readings communities who are doing the work learn from each other? Mm. So that everybody's not, again, just doing great things in their own space, but how can they share together? You know what? We may find out there is an alignment of how we can help them with what they want to do. So we're intentional about finding partners that work, and we think that the space and the impact of on grade level reading is good. But the factors we look at for alignment are leadership, willingness, readiness, that's that readiness mm-hmm. word, capacity and culture. And if we find it doesn't align, then we say, you know, what has there been value for you so far? Great. If not, we wish you well and we will work in a different direction.
You know, it's so interesting when we talk about partners in the foundation world. We so frequently talk with that sort of lip service. We use the word partner, but what we really mean is a silent financial partner. Please give us money. Please get out of the way. Please don't tell us what to do. And we'll give you a report at the end that says we did what we said we'd do with the money. But you're really looking at partner from a very, very different. You're looking at it from that real meaning of the word partner, where folks bring everything that matters to the tables to create something bigger.
Yeah, we try to break down that dynamic between funder and grantee and to become partners, because we tell people right from the outset, we are going to play in your sandbox and you're going to tell us what works for you and what doesn't work and be very frank and open as we go about that.
How have you found that? How do folks respond to this?
Actually, it's very difficult.
Really?
Yeah, it's a dynamic that's, I don't know where it got bred or what generational, where did it happen? But the big questions people look at us is they go, what does Patterson Foundation want and how much money can we get?
Right.
We always tell people, actually, the money isn't really where the value of working with us is. It's the added value that we bring from our communications capacity building, from our technology, and are looking at how to help whatever partner's doing be more financially thrivable. Mm-hmm. We use thrivability as a real important thing because we don't think there's enough conversation about how do you make whatever this is last and have legs. We don't even do program funding.
Right.
What we're about is helping networks or multiple entities be smarter on how they're communicating and how they're thriving. And I will tell you, it's very difficult because of that funder-grantee dynamic that's out there.
Yeah.
People want specificity, And we work with organic intentionality.
It really is quite interesting. I mean, a big chunk of the work that we've been doing at Creating the Future is really relooking at that power dynamic that has been created over the 100, 150 or so years of what is seen as modern philanthropy, which started with the robber barons and started with people with means deciding whether or not they would give to those who were doing good work. And it has created that dynamic where now it's the expectation of all parties. And when we've seen funders like you guys that are really working with such intentionality at breaking down those walls, and that it takes time in both directions to not only find folks that are funding partners that are at that place, Annie E. Casey being one of them, as you're talking about, finding other funders that are looking for that new dynamic, but also looking for folks who understand how to play at the other side of that, even without those words, funder and grantee. I mean, the power dynamic just in those words.
We're not allowed to use the five-letter word. We don't do that, because then everyone goes, what do you mean you don't? You don't make grants. No, actually, we don't. We create partnerships.
Yeah.
And the other end, I think you said it earlier in the interview, people think they partner,
right,
but it's not real partnering. Partnering is when the field gets a little bit more level. It'll never be really level because we've got the money and people need the money, but we work really as hard as we can to show it's not about the money, but rather the capacity that we bring to help the network of the multiple entities do better together.
Yeah. It really is interesting because I've interviewed several other funders who are doing intriguing work, as well as Kathleen Enright at Grantmakers for Effective Organizations. And the constant theme in that is sometimes explicitly and sometimes just sort of implicitly, is that, yes, organizations need the money, and there is that dynamic, but funders are nothing without the folks on the ground doing the work. So there is such a mutual need,
yes,
that you can't do what you need to do without those folks on the ground, and that's never really translated. Folks feel it's all one way, but you really seem to have a sense that you can only do your work if you've got the partners to work with.
Well, actually, you have now articulated when someone says to us, well, how do you measure your impact? Mm-hmm. And we say, well, actually, we measure our impact through our partners.
Yep.
Our impact is as successful as our partners are. And that's actually how we look at it and hold ourselves accountable. There's one other thread in here that I don't know that I've addressed in the organic intentionality and being a learning organization. A lot of times people capture great final reports, or they capture great white papers and evaluations. But it's the how do you share what's in the cookie jar?
Right.
Not keep your learning to yourself. People always say, what's Patterson doing? You can check us out daily on the website. Our website changes every day.
Wow.
In how we use social media. And we have to keep sharing what we're learning back out again and keep the conversations vibrant. So we're constantly looking for opening up the cookie jar and sending out what we're learning to others.
I can see you listed in the things that you're looking for in a partner, you listed culture. Uh-huh. And you guys are a relatively new foundation in terms of the way you're operating right now. You've really captured cultural things that matter to Patterson. I'm curious how you identify what you're looking for in culture with other organizations and what you see working when you're seeing change happening. What's happening at that cultural level?
First of all, we are not event-driven, we're process-driven, and process is probably not a good word. We're continuum-driven, because we actually have to dance and date for a while to see if this is a good mutual partnership.
Uh-huh.
And that's really where you find, is there the culture? And our culture is there a culture that understands we're moving through time and we want to look through how we can do this better, smarter, different? We also use the phrase often more different, better, less,
mm-hmm.
because people always want more from people. And sometimes you have to do less to get better or different.
Give me an example of that. I'm not quite getting it.
All right. Well, let's see. I'll take it to the personal level.
Okay.
If you're in a job and there's more tasks coming your way, you have just so much that you can possibly do. So if you keep loading on more tasks, you either have to take away some tasks or you have to show me how to do it better or differently so that I can achieve the work that you've asked me to do. So very often, as we think about nonprofits, the layers of either new regulations or new audit requirements or new demands from the field, they sit there and it keeps piling on them all the time. Right. And they never have the breath of a pause to look at, now, wait a second. What should I be doing differently or less than? Mm. So we like to keep the more different, better, less in our conversations with people so that people can be realistic. That goes actually back to your first question about change.
Yeah.
Can't change when you keep layering stuff on that I'm so smothered I can't change. I may be ready and willing, but if I don't have the capacity to change, you're not going to get change.
And that happens at the community level as well, because we do just keep lumping more and more stuff on. Well, let the local community deal with that. Let the local community deal with that. And we're finding what is happening when we just keep piling more stuff on.
And that's so true in our education system.
Yeah.
Now we have different programs for everything that will solve everything a child should be. And yet there's only still 6 hours in a day.
Mm-hmm.
Educational day. So we always have to keep that more different, better, less lens on if indeed you want change to occur.
When I initially asked you the question, you talked a lot about leadership and using it in a very, very different way. You're really talking about non-hierarchical leadership and emerging leadership. What have you seen in just the few years that you have been doing work in communities as Patterson Foundation? What have you seen going on in terms of that emerging leadership piece?
I think that's actually where the most exciting pieces have. The work that John McKnight does on asset-based community development, where you look at what are your assets instead of what are your problems. Mm-hmm. I think that if we acknowledge that everybody has capacity to use their gifts better, smarter, effectively to make a difference, I think that's when people feel that they can be a leader and are not christened with a label, but rather it becomes part of their DNA. Is everybody going to be a leader in everything? No. I don't even think leaders are leaders. Good leaders are leaders in everything. I think they know when to step back. I love the visual or the story about a good leader knows when to follow, a good leader knows when to walk beside, and a good leader knows when to walk ahead. And acknowledging when is the right time to be which kind of leader is so very important. We have an organization in Sarasota County called Sarasota County Openly Plans for Excellence. And it's an acronym of SCOPE.
Mm-hmm.
It is about how do you create community conversations to plan for the future. And we have done topics from aging the possibilities to working on mental health readiness. But you approach it from the standpoint of having conversations, not with the usual suspects or the usual leadership councils. You have to have those who are in the space, but let's bring some new voices to the table. And it's very interesting as new voices come to the table, how the conversation changes. Another organization that we have locally is called Community Youth Development, and they work with teens. And one of the things they have done, they actually got the legislation changed in Tallahassee for all of Florida, where teens could be a legal, legitimate member of a nonprofit board with full responsibility.
Wonderful.
When you now have a nonprofit board, a public advisory group who now has a high school student as a full member of that board, you should watch the conversations. The kids actually end up being, and oftentimes, the leaders, because they're not afraid to ask the question.
Right.
Because take their responsibilities very, very seriously, and they have a different perspective. But that's an example of letting leaders emerge from all different avenues and not assuming just because you've got a title, you're the leader.
Well, Deborah, you know, I could listen to the things that you guys are working on. I could listen to this all day long. The thing that becomes very clear to me as we wrap up this conversation is something that you said, that a good leader knows when to step back. And the one thing that Patterson seems to be modeling immensely is what good leadership looks like. And I'm so appreciative for the work that you're doing and so glad that you took some time to be with us today.
Well, Hildy, I want to thank you again. I do think we covered the waterfront. We didn't necessarily go deep on anything. So I hope that I brought some contribution to the greater good conversation.
Well, we'll just have to get you back sometime and we'll dive into the deep end.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Deborah. Listening to Deborah is so energizing. She makes us dream about possibilities and is so willing to explore how we might take steps to turn those possibilities into reality. Imagine if every foundation invited real relationships instead of the relationships we have right now. Imagine a relationship where everyone would bring everything they have to the table, like in that old fable of stone soup, where we all assume we have lots to work with and that we're all going to put what we have into the mix to create something amazing together that none of us can accomplish on our own. That image of soup gets to the heart of what Deborah said about learning and change. When we add all sorts of things to a soup, we're no longer bragging about the wonders of the carrot or the onion that we happen to bring. We're all rejoicing in the result, that delicious soup. When Deborah noted that the foundation will change in the course of doing its work, we realize that the carrot and the onion have changed as well. They've infused the flavors of everything else from that amazing broth. Seen through that lens of true partnership and relationship, we also begin to see another truth. That if our goal is to create what Deborah called new realities for our communities, then the traditional funder-grantee power dynamics that we think of as normal actually go counter to the goal of everyone living well in community with each other. We start to see that it's impossible to create equitable relationships in our communities if we're starting with the assumption of inequity in the relationships that are working to create that result, the relationships between funders and organizations, the relationships between organizations and all the other moving parts of their communities. And through the work of organizations like the Patterson Foundation, we start to see the power of demonstrating a more effective way of being. Which leads to questions for your own work. For on-the-ground organizations and social enterprises, are there small steps you can take to begin blending your work with the work of others to make that big pot of soup that is the community you all want? For every activity you undertake, what would it make possible if you asked, who else cares about this? And how might we work together to make it happen? If you're a funder, what might it look like if you stopped seeing walls between your work and your grantees' work and started just seeing one big pot of work that everyone is doing together, that great big sandbox Deborah talked about? What would that shift of thinking make possible for your foundation? What would it make possible for your community? And then let's ask the questions about the elephant in the room. What is stopping you from taking steps to begin playing with others as if no one owned the sandbox? What is the worst that could happen if you took those first steps? And perhaps even more important, what is the worst that could happen if you do not take steps to engage more deeply with everyone else who cares about what you care about? As you begin exploring these big questions, I hope you'll share your observations at Creating the Future's Facebook page at facebook.com/creatingthefuture. We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Making Change. If you have ideas for guests for this podcast, folks who are driving new ways of thinking about what it takes to create visionary social change, please get hold of me through our website at creatingthefuture.org or on Twitter at Hildy Gottlieb. Thanks for listening and for wanting to create a better future for your community and our world. For the Chronicle of Philanthropy, I'm Hildy Gottlieb. We'll see you next month here on Making Change.